Congress is underpaid and underfunded. Republicans are ready to concede pretty much everything and work with Democrats. At least the leadership thinks so. It all may sound like bizarro world, but that's what the week is looking like on Capitol Hill. Here with our weekly look ahead, Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins. And David, I want to start with the health care bill, because looking at the disagreements and the fragility of what's going on, does it seem like maybe this is the end of the road for Mitch McConnell?
I think it's the end of the road potentially for this bill in its most ambitious Republican form. I don't think it's the end of the road for Mitch McConnell. He has a very firm grip on control of the Senate Republican caucus. There is no move to replace him. There is no candidate to replace him. You know, just to sort of say the most obvious cliche in politics, you can't beat somebody with nobody. And there is nobody out there who really wants to take the job away from him. The Republicans, I don't believe they have ever switched leaders in the middle of a Congress. Of course, 18 months from now could be a different story if he proves that he can't work miracles with the Trump agenda and his narrow majority, but we shall see.
Because he is a person really good at amassing and exercising power. But in this case, he seems pretty powerless with respect to legislation regarding this whole healthcare mess or nirvana, whatever you want to call it.
That's true. You know, Mitch McConnell does have a reputation on the Hill for being a wizard at deal making and for being able to sort of cut deals when impasses seem to be locked in. This incident with healthcare seems to be challenging that perception. One sort of subtle difference is that most of the big deals that Mitch McConnell has cut in his time have been when he's actually been in the minority and working with Democrats to try and get sort of a partial bipartisan victory. In this case, he is working only with Republicans, at least at this point, and you know has not been able to find that magic formula that can get 50 of 52 on board when the number of people opposing what he's written or what he and his staff have written are equally divided between the super conservatives and the centrists.
So the handicappers are saying what then as they get down to real business here on Tuesday, especially people at Health and Human Services that might be watching this to see what their fate will be in terms of program. Will there be no bill or will there be a total compromise bill that pretty much leaves the Affordable Care Act intact? Or
well, I think, you know, probably a couple of chapters farther along in the book than I have read comfortably, because I don't really know what Mitch McConnell has said. And it's been kind of a pep talk or bargaining point that he said to the other Republicans is, we'd better figure this out all on our own. Otherwise, we'll be forced to go to the bargaining table with Chuck Schumer, because the bill, we all know the bill is broken. And I think there is a bipartisan consensus whether the bill is hopelessly broken or just, in need of repair but can be fixed. Anyway, McConnell has to this point said, you know, don't make me do this. Don't make me work with Chuck Schumer. How many of his own Republicans will resist the idea of a bipartisan compromise to kind of shore up the problems with the bill, especially with the insurance markets in some of these states? Too early to say. I think there are going to be some conservatives who will cling for a long, long time to this notion that tearing it out root and branch, as McConnell himself used to like to say, is the only way. But I think in the end, you know, these senators are, they don't want to see their constituents suffer. They don't want to see the economy suffer. They don't want to see a sixth of the economy suffer. They will sooner or later step in to fix the problems.
And closer to Congress's own situation, there's an interesting story in Roll Call today about the Congress grappling with its own cybersecurity concerns. That is to say, the Hill itself seems or feels vulnerable to some of the hacking.
Yes, it certainly does. This is a story by my colleague Stephanie Aiken that kind of really sort of takes a deep dive into how, you know, members of Congress have spent a long time focused on cybersecurity elsewhere in the government and the executive branch and overseas, and seem to have not, in many cases, done what they need to do to protect their own selves. In part, this is because Congress is hardly a monolith. You know, there are 535 different offices, then there are dozens of different committees. Each one is its own sort of little fiefdom. There is not, to the extent that there is some sort of legislative branch-wide security, it can be trumped or undercut by the individual members. So yes, there's the Legislative Branch Appropriations Bill talks about thousands and thousands of attempted hacks that have been thwarted. We don't exactly know what's gotten through. We don't know yet. I don't think of any vulnerability that has been exploited in a way that the public's been made aware of. But what Stephanie suggests is that that could happen anytime.
We're speaking with Roll Call senior editor David Hawkins. I guess they're worried about maybe the legislative system and some of those, or maybe the financial systems, those that are common to the entire Hill.
Yeah, that's right. The payroll system and the payroll and the personnel system, something akin to what happened with Social Security. I think that's probably a big concern.
And speaking of payroll, you have an interesting column on some of the outgoing words of Jason Chaffetz, who's retiring back to Utah middle of his term. And he thinks, strangely for a Republican, I guess, from Utah, he left with a parting shot that, hey, we're all paid too little.
You know, it is what I write is sort of like a Nixon goes to China moment, because Jason Chaffetz, he amassed power and became one of the most prominent Republicans on the Hill pretty quickly by doing a very good job at sort of railing against the establishment and the old ways of doing business. And he was a proud member of the so-called Couch Caucus. He actually burned through three different beds during his time in Congress. And now, as he leaves to join the TV pundit world for at least a few years, although he's thinking of coming back to politics someday, he says, yes, that the housing in Washington is impossible to afford on a congressional salary, especially if you are trying to maintain a home and a family back in your own home district, and that there should be I think he proposed $30,000 a year per member housing stipend. This is not going anywhere. Several years ago, Jim Moran, congressman from Northern Virginia, proposed something much, much more modest, $25 a day as a housing allowance to be a drop in the bucket for how much it costs to spend a night in Washington. And that was roundly shouted down. So this probably isn't going anywhere. Neither is the congressional pay raise. Congress is on course to deny itself what was supposed to be an automatic cost of living increase for a ninth consecutive year. So the salary for members of Congress frozen at $174,000 now since 2009. That sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money for many people in a lot of places in the country. It is, I think, there are good studies to show that trying to keep a place in Washington and not live in your office, which is what many people do, and have a life back home on $174,000 is a tough thing to do.
When they live in the office, do they shower in the congressional gyms?
That is exactly right. Right, there are. It's the most sacrosanct place in all of Capitol Hill are the two members' gymnasiums. You can a reporter and a member of the public can go almost anywhere else in staff on the Hill with certain badges or permissions. You can never go in the members' gym. So yes, that's what happens. They sleep. Most of them don't actually sleep on their couches, because that would be a little bit icky to invite constituents in for meetings and have them sit where you slept. Most of them keep
or vice versa.
Their hideaway beds, and then they go down to the members' gym and take a shower first thing in the morning. So you can, if you go to the Hill early enough, you can sometimes see members of Congress in gym shorts and T-shirts and towels wrapped around their necks going to take a shower.
I think I'll skip that site. I guess maybe it's time to bring back the boarding houses.
You know, there's been talk of that. There's, you know, the House did away with the congressional page system. So there is a dorm where teenage pages used to live, that some have talked about renting rooms to members of Congress. That way, the countervailing argument is that would turn into a frat party very quickly.
Yeah, well, I guess the thought we can leave people with is, if you take it too seriously, imagine Mitch McConnell walking around in his boxers, and that'll take everything down to earth, I guess. David Hawkins, the senior editor at Roll Call, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.